We're here talking with Terry Dietrich, president of AFR. Terry, tell us a little bit about this reception you've guys got going on. Is this your second year to do this?
It's our second year, Carson, and a year ago, prior to the farm show, we talked about what can we do to communicate better with consumers and educate consumers, because we've been lax in that for so long. And so we decided to have a little reception here. And last year, Tulsa had a new mayor, and he was just coming in. And it was interesting to me, doing a little research, that we don't think of Tulsa as being agricultural, and we've kind of just been a divide there too long. But when I did the research, I found out that that was 2016. In 2015, there was more agriculture income in more input from agriculture operations in Tulsa County than there was in Oklahoma County. And then when the OSU Extension people who were here came around and said, thank you for finally realizing there's agriculture in Tulsa County. Well, we began then. Senator Rader was brand new, and we thought, let's go ahead and keep doing this thing. And we've broadened our invite list to get more of our agriculture people across the state to come in and bring the legislators from this part of the state. We've got a lot in common, and we need to share that. Hopefully, we'll make a little headway, a little at a time.
Very good. You all have a great turnout tonight. You've got a lot of legislators and senators and people running for governor and everybody here tonight. Would you say that's a good show of support for agriculture?
I'm very, very pleased, yes. And ag organizations, others coming in representing their organization, helping us. You know, we have the same issues. We support the same people. And from production, from the field to the fork, everybody's involved. Everybody's interested in agriculture. They just don't realize how they can get involved and how important it is that we work together. So hopefully we'll help alleviate that divide.
Very good. And, I mean, you all are doing all sorts of things to kind of close that gap, I guess I should say, with our consumers. One of those things that you do is working with youth, obviously, and you all just had your speech contest. How did that go?
It went great, Carson. Thank you for asking. Every year, I see our speech contest. I mean, the best of the best. We hold five of them around over the state in each FFA district we hold a speech contest in. And it's for 4-H. We start with fifth graders through high school. And there's 13 categories in which they can choose to speak. And we do that in five different districts. And then the top two from each category, from each district, is eligible to come to the state contest. And it just rejuvenates me to see the promise that's out there. You know, we've got leaders for tomorrow, and we just don't recognize them enough. You know, we concentrate, you turn on the news, if somebody did something bad, we hear all about it.
Yeah.
But these kids that are really hitting home runs out here don't get enough publicity. So we're trying to encourage them, give them opportunities to better themselves, and be better citizens in the long run.
Absolutely. So what's out there, just kind of out in the countryside, any issues that you see coming forward as we head into 2018?
Well, it's going to be very, very important on from the federal level on what kind of farm bill we get. It scares me. I talked to my accountant yesterday. He kind of thinks that the new tax reform will be a good deal for us. However, he did not know. When you listen to the news, they say that it's going to increase our national debt $1.4 trillion. And to keep that from being any worse than that, I received a sheet the other day where there has been a proposal to cut $20 billion a year from USDA programs that comes out to help our agriculture people get by. And we can't do that and continue. There's never been, you know what, a lot of people don't realize, they see the big dollars for a farm program. They don't realize that's 82 to 84% food stamps. Farmers don't get that at all. So out of that 16, 18% of it that's left, I've never seen in my lifetime, and I've been around a good long while, I've never seen in my lifetime a farm program that did any more for a producer than in case of a catastrophe. It helps pay their input supply bill, helps pay their landlord and their bank. They don't make a profit on it, but when they can pay their bills, they can get credit to put out another crop. And consumers need to feel assured that they're able to do that. And if we take $20 billion a cut out of this next farm bill, we have people telling us, oh, that's not going to happen, that's not going to happen. Well, you know, we'll see. But that's one of the things we are fighting and fighting hard on behalf of everybody's plate.
I think just working the room here tonight, one thing that I've heard come up time and time again has just been about the downtrend that this agricultural economic situation is in right now. I mean, I guess you're hearing the same thing.
Well, and I have a farm and ranch operation myself. I'm feeling the same thing. In fact, it's a good thing. My son is my full partner, and he has off-farm employment. His wife has off-farm employment, and I have off-farm employment. And all three of us are working to support our farming habit. I talked to the accountant yesterday. I've lost more money on the farm this year. Well, what about somebody that doesn't have the off-farm employment? They can't keep doing that.
Are the days of the full-time farmer, are they over, or do you see that improving in the situation?
Well, in 2000-2001, I was the national president of the National Association of Wheat Growers. Spent a lot of time in Washington, D.C., worked closely with Mr. Keith Collins, who was chief economist for USDA. And their figures, and this is 2000-2001, 90% of the net spendable income of farmers at that time came from off-farm sources. Unbelievable. And why do people do that? Why am I still farming when I've lost money this year doing it? I'm feeding, using my other jobs to feed the habit, I guess. But this year, my oldest grandson put out his first crop tilling the same soil that his great-great-grandfather tilled. You think that land doesn't take on a sacred nature after a while? And everybody looks back at the sacrifices that were made in previous generations so the next generation could have it. Well, that gives you a pretty good incentive to work hard to try to keep it going and pass it on.
That kind of reminds me of a recent report I heard about how there is an influx right now of young farmers thinking that they can get in the business and make it. And, you know, I think one thing that I see AFR doing and others is really supporting that young effort and trying to support them and help them be successful.
We're trying our best to do that. And they don't have to be a large commercial farmer. A lot of beginning farmers are coming in with a niche market. They may be doing gardens and selling fresh vegetables. They may have specialized maybe grass-fed beef or something, or organic this or that. And I think there's a lot of hype there and a lot of that. But if it sells, you produce for the market.
Absolutely.
Too many times in my history, I can look back, we didn't produce for the market. We just produced, and we were price takers, not price makers. And you don't make a lot of headway doing that.
Despite our downtrend right now, and obviously the agricultural sector has been like everything else, it has its ups and its downs. You think there's still a lot to be optimistic about in the agricultural economy?
agriculturalists are an optimistic breed, or they would not be in the business. It's kind of a joke, but it's not funny. But it's true. The cemetery is full of farmers that thought next year would be better. And people just live their lives. And a lot of farmers may die wealthy, but they don't live wealthy, because everything they make goes back into, and only when they die and everything is liquidated, then they say, oh, yeah, he was worth quite a little bit. Well, he didn't enjoy it. And usually it's split between a family that's not going to enjoy, because they're going to turn right around and do the same thing. That's the way they were raised. So anyway, but it keeps America on the food on the table. We are the only nation in the world that if all the ports were closed and we could not get any imports, we could still feed our population. And we're the only nation in the world that can do that. Now, we still have trade policies. It's back scratching. We let them import a little something so we can export to their people. And it's all trade, and we've got to have it now. But the United States has got 5% of the population, and we've 95% of the population is outside of the United States. But we feed them around the world.